Next case is 96-1454, Bush and Cook Leasing, Inc. versus Roger Tracy Tax Commission.
You've got a great group of cases for us today. You've got a great group of cases for us today.
Mr. Weller. I haven't made an election not to capitalize those?
That's correct, Your Honor. If they are deductible, they're deductible, and you must comply with those rules. Bush has complied with the accounting rules. By contrast, and we would state that for purposes of its bookkeeping, it is treated this way. For all other purposes, Bush is recognized as the owner of these vehicles. It has not sold them for sales tax purposes. Ohio sales tax law does not treat Bush as having sold them. Ohio personal property tax law does not treat Bush as having sold these vehicles.
Then why with all this do we so often just attach a copy of your federal return to substantiate what you're claiming on your state return?
Well, in fact, in this case, for federal income tax purposes, Bush was treated as continuing to own the vehicles, not having sold them. So also for federal income tax purposes. The only place that Bush was treated as having sold these vehicles was for purposes of calculating its net worth. not for purposes of determining whether it sold the vehicle, but simply for determining what its net worth was. FASB sets forth the manner in which one calculates that net worth.
Does following your argument make this in any way, or some of these in any way, not taxable at all?
No, many of the leases will be, or many of these transactions do give rise to an asset that is taxed in Ohio.
Yeah, I understand that. That's not the ones you're complaining about. What about the ones we're talking about?
The ones we're talking about, many of them are taxed in Ohio because the customer is in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And if we continue to own the vehicle and lease it to an Ohio customer, we are paying tax in Ohio. The vehicles that are leased outside of Ohio, we should not be subjected to Ohio tax on those because they're not being used in Ohio.
Okay, now are they taxed federally? I understand the first two categories. We're talking about the third category. I mean, that's what Mr. Sauer is obviously interested in. He's taxing everything else. He's just looking for a few more things to latch on to. Now, what's wrong with that? Because you do your business here.
Well, we do some of our business here. The statute specifically looks to the assets that Bush owns in Ohio. The statute is unequivocal and absolutely clear. The word it uses are the assets owned in Ohio. Bush does not own, Bush continues to own these assets. Let me back up. I'm sorry, I misspoke.
Yeah, because that isn't right.
The statute looks to what assets are owned by Bush. Bush continues to own these assets. If these assets are owned in Houston, Ohio, they're taxed in Ohio. The statute says if Bush owns these assets and they're used outside of Ohio, they are not taxed in Ohio.
Okay, so they're not taxed in Ohio. They're clearly not taxed on your federal tax return. Is that right?
No, they are taxed on our federal tax return as a lease. As we receive rent payments, we tax those under the federal income tax rules. In other jurisdictions, where our vehicles are located and we own, we pay tax in those other jurisdictions on those. Under the Ohio method, we would pay tax in Ohio on all of the assets, even though in other jurisdictions we would pay tax on the vehicles in those states.
Well, I didn't see any argument by you that this was double taxation, but that seemed to be what you're arguing now.
Only in response to the question, are these assets taxed anywhere else? I think we do run the risk of double taxation. We do understand in a multi-state business, that's always a possibility, but I just want to make clear that we are paying tax in other states on these assets. These do not state tax completely. The issue in this case is whether Bush owned those vehicles or whether it had sold those vehicles. The commissioner took the position that Bush sold those vehicles. As a result, an intangible asset was received, that being this installment note for lease payments over time. And as an intangible asset, the commissioner said that asset must be treated as an Ohio asset. Bush contends that the asset Bush owns is a vehicle and it will be taxed according to where the customer is located. The BTA looked to the commissioner's approach of saying if your accounting treatment treated this as a sale, the commissioner said, then it must be treated as a sale for franchise tax purposes. The BTA said that is wrong. The substance, not the book treatment, not the book labels, will control whether these assets were sold.
The true object.
The substance of the transaction. The BTA did use the true object test. We contend that was the wrong test to use. That test has never been used in Ohio tax law to determine whether a sale or a lease took place.
You don't have to find this the true object, though, to affirm, do we? Which is not your position, I understand.
No, we have alternative positions. Even if the true object test is used, we believe the BTA was unreasonable in determining that the true object of the parties here was a purchase.
Supposing the true object test does not apply.
If the true object test does not apply, then we believe the appropriate standard to apply is the standard set forth by this court to determine sale versus lease in other Ohio tax situations. In the Alphonse case and the Equities case, this court said in determining whether a sale or lease has taken place for tax purposes, those cases were personal property tax cases, if the lessee is obligated at the end of the lease term to purchase the equipment or the item, then a sale is taking place. If the lessee is not obligated to purchase the item at the end of the lease term, then a sale has not taken place, and the owner continues to be the lessor in the transaction. Just as sales tax and personal property tax cases are interested in who the owner of the property is, because that's the basis for sales tax and personal property tax, so is the franchise tax in Ohio interested in who the owner is. In fact, that's the term used in the statute. What is the asset owned by Bush? That was the issue in this case. Our contention is that books do not control this determination, just as the Board of Tax Appeals ruled. The books do not control. The books only control not for determining what assets a taxpayer owns, but for purposes of determining what the value of their franchise in the state is. The courts have been clear that labels and the county treatment do not control, only the substance of the transaction. The commissioner spends his brief arguing that Bush's financial statements do not reflect the vehicles. That form, that label, is unimportant. What is important only in the books is what's the value associated to the assets owned by Bush. The commissioner argues there was no depreciation. The federal income tax depreciation that Bush claimed, the commissioner argues, was not on the books. Well, that is unimportant to determining what assets Bush owned. The federal income tax depreciation would only again indicate that for other tax purposes, Bush owned those vehicles. It's unclear whether the commissioner is now trying to disregard our books, Bush's books, to determine its value. That appears to be the gist of what it's trying to do, but of course Bush cannot disregard his books to determine value unless he sets the value set forth on his books. However, again, books do not control, and the cases are clear as we've cited in the brief, and as the BTA rules, substance controls, not form. The true object test is the wrong test. That's the one applied by the BTA. Alice Fonts and Equalese are the only cases ever to resolve the issue in tax law, how tax law, as to who the owner of the property is, that is, whether a sale or lease took place. That was those were personal property tax cases. The commissioner then extended them to sales tax cases, as well as the courts extended them to sales tax cases. As I described before, under that test, it is absolutely clear that Bush continued to own these vehicles. That is, it did not sell these vehicles, rather leased those vehicles. It is noteworthy in the Equalese case, this court said it doesn't matter how many lessees purchase the vehicles for the item at the end of the lease term. If the lessee is not obligated to purchase those vehicles or the item, it is a true lease. It is not a sale. There, the commissioner argued that nearly all of the lessees exercised the option in trying to say that the transaction should be treated as a sale. This court rejected that proposition. The Alstom's Equalese test is the right test to apply for four reasons. One, it's the only test ever used by a court in Ohio to determine sale versus lease in the tax case. Second, to use any other test would result in inconsistent treatment of Bush under Ohio tax law. For sales tax purposes, Bush owns the vehicle. For personal property tax purposes, Bush owns the vehicle. For UCC purposes in Ohio, Bush owns the vehicle. However, using this true object test could result in a situation where Bush doesn't own the vehicle for franchise tax.
Who insures the vehicle?
Bush insures the vehicle as well as the lessee is required to insure the vehicle. Not unlike if any of you lease your vehicle.
The UCO requires that.
Well, in this case, Bush requires it too because it wants to make sure that its asset is protected. Both it has insurance and it wants to make sure that the lessee has insurance.
Is yours excess?
I'd have to submit additional information. The record does not contain that information.
Does the record indicate whether or not your client was paying tax into these other states on these vehicles?
The record is silent as to that, but one can deduce that if the state requires to pay tax in another state, if the state
Weller? Mr. Sauer?
Thank you. Please report the record in silence as to whether or not tax is paid to the understanding. The record is also silent as to the record, not the brief, is completely silent that they submitted as to any law, any decision of this court respecting the franchise tax in that word calculation under section 73305A. And that is the problem with their appeal. The issue is not, as Mr. Warwar has repeatedly said, the ownership of these vehicles for tax purposes under sales tax, under property tax. It is not the issue. The issue in this case, for the tax commissioner, for the Board of Tax Appeals, and now for this court, is what section 5733.05A requires. And that section is extremely clear. It sets forth one of two bases for calculating the franchise tax in Ohio. The franchise tax, by the way, is not a tax on the value of the property, it's a tax on the privilege of exercising a corporation's franchise in this state. And the General Assembly has set up two ways of calculating that tax. The first basis is the net worth basis under subsection A of section 5733.05. The second basis is the net income basis under subsection B. The net worth basis simply says, take total value as shown on the taxpayer's books, on the company's books, of its capital, surplus, etc., with the following exceptions. The total value as shown on the books. Then, once that total value, that net worth, is calculated, subsection A says, take half of that value that you calculate as shown on the books, and it's allocated to Ohio based using a fraction, the numerator of which is net book value of all property owned or used. Not vehicles owned in Ohio, but all property owned or used in Ohio. The net book value, what that means is they're talking about assets that are on the book. The denominator is the net book value of all property everywhere. So repeatedly, throughout subsection A, you've got the General Assembly referring the tax commissioner and every reviewing body to the books of corporation in determining what assets are used in the calculation of this net worth basis of the franchise tax liability. This court has addressed this issue. It's addressed it a number of times, going back 44 years ago to National Food Company versus Porterville. In that case, the tax commission had looked to property tax principles in trying to determine the market value of certain property, and the court said no. Or the court said no. It said, unlike the tax law, which allows the tax commissioner to do certain things and to depart from book value, the franchise tax statute, and at that time it was the same language in the general code, the franchise tax statute points the tax commissioner in the direction of book value and says, that's what you use for the net worth. For the net worth calculation. About 4 years ago in Gray Force, Inc., this court unanimously rejected the tax commissioner's reliance on federal filings and the statements that were submitted by the taxpayer in the federal, because the court found that they were not consistent with generally accepted accounting principles. A year ago, in Edwards Industry, this court told a taxpayer that came in and said, I realize we've booked these assets a certain way. However, we want this different treatment. The court said, under National Food versus Porter, that case in 1953, the tax commissioner must take properly prepared books of the company as he finds them. The tax commissioner has been repeatedly told by this court, no, you don't have any authority to depart from this. Ask yourself, what would the reaction of this court be if we were to walk in here and make the kind of argument and try the kind of departure that they tried? We'd be sent out of here with our tails between our legs because we would be ignoring exactly what this court has told us in those cases. In the present case, the only real issue the board had to apply and determine in applying the statute in accordance with this court's decision whether or not the books were properly prepared, whether the books treated these capitalized leases as intangible assets were properly prepared. And that's why the court went to the two options. It looked at it and it says, what is the substance of the court? It says, what is the substance of these decisions? Now, the court cited a number of net income approach decisions of this court, such as 20th Century Fox. But ultimately, what they did is they looked at it and they said, what is really happening here in these leases? And they said, taxpayer itself is stipulating that under FASB, its capitalization of these leases as intangible assets on its books and its treatment of the tangible vehicles as having been sold and its exclusion of those tangible vehicles from its books was reasonable under Financial Accounting Statement Board, Standard Board, Statement Number 13. They said it was reasonable because in the taxpayer's own opinion, it had met sufficient criteria under that statement for capitalization of the leases.
Are you relying totally on the true object test?
No.
You don't need the true object test.
You made the comment in the initial argument, we can affirm without it. You can't affirm without it. The board simply did exactly what the taxpayer did. It just took a more indirect route, say, we're establishing in our own mind that these were properly prepared statements and that bad things were properly prepared. I think under the stipulations, you've got the stipulation of the taxpayer that in its opinion, the criteria of the accounting standard board were met for capitalization of these leases. So what do you have? You have books of the taxpayer, properly prepared books of the taxpayer that have intangible assets. We're not just talking about values, we're talking about complying with subsection A, 57305.
If we find that to be a fact, doesn't that end the argument?
It ends the argument.
You don't ever get to the next step of what was their thought or what was their idea or is it the true object. It's under the, I guess, the Porterfield case, National Tube.
Right.
If the books are in accordance with accounting standards, you've said time and time again that the commissioner has to accept those.
Yes.
And you say they were.
They were. In fact.
And let me stop you. I had the exact same question, Justice Douglas, did you, and let me take it one step further to put it in the negative. You're saying that we could hold that the true object test does not apply, but that the records, using their records as the test, does apply, that would not be inconsistent.
I think that would probably be more accurate. I think the true object test tends to confuse the ultimate issue. The ultimate issue is whether the books were properly prepared. And the true object test, as the board applied it, was only a way of getting to that.
Yeah, because I have some problem with saying that the true object is a sale when the lessee is not required to purchase the vehicle sometime during the lease. That doesn't seem to me to be a sale, necessarily. I mean,
basically, for accounting purposes, they treat it as a sale, and under FASB, it's proper to treat them as sales on records. Ultimately, you have
But that's different than saying the true object, I mean, generically or independent of how they do in their books, that the true object is a sale. Would you agree? Well, you don't have to agree.
I'm not sure. I thought your question on it is. Bottom line is, true object is a term that arises in a number of taxes and in a number of cases and issues. In the franchise tax cases, true object is usually with respect to applying subsection B2D of the net income approach, where you depart from some certain apportionment formula for net income, and the court has looked at the true object. You see it in the state park release cases and in 27 blocks, which is a licensing agreement. But for purposes of here, it's really kind of a new concept the way the board has pulled it in. Ultimately, the issue is whether or not the books were properly prepared. And you can look high and low in the records, you will find not one bit of authority for saying these books were properly prepared. It's stipulated that they were properly prepared. Once that determination is made, as Justice Douglas has said, that is the only requirement, and it's the only requirement because once that stipulation and fact has been determined that the books were properly made, then did act reasonably in that situation. And we submit the issue.
Thank you, Mr. Sauer. Mr. Werber, you've saved a little over half a minute of your time.
I'll get right to the point. The commissioner's argument is that books control for all purposes. I want to read you a quote from this court. It goes right to the argument. This court stated in the case of Ohio Savings Bank versus Limbaugh, cited in our brief, it is not the transaction's form, the format used, or how the transaction may be recorded for bookkeeping purposes that controls. It is what the effect such transaction actually has upon the value of the corporation's net worth that was and is important for Ohio franchising tax purposes. Bookkeeping methodology alone cannot determine whether property should or should not be included as part of the taxpayer's net worth. Books only control for value. I'll read you the statute itself, which indicates that books only control for value, not for purpose of determining what the true character of the asset is. The statute says the total value as shown by the books of the company of its capital surplus is then allocated or apportioned. It's only value. This court said in 20th Century Fox, it said in Consumer Direct, it said in Goodyear Tire, it said in Ohio Savings Limbaugh. Books control value only. Books do not determine whether an asset is a tangible or intangible asset. The only test this court has ever used to determine whether a sale or lease is the same place
Thank you, Mr. Werber. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.